Hello and welcome to A Woman's Heart. This is Lisa Granger. Do you enjoy a good Christmas story? I know I do. I always enjoy finding a good Christmas story for the holiday season, and they also make great gifts. Well, today is a special treat. I have Kelly Gosshorn with us, and she is one of the authors on a compilation called Chiseled on the Heart. Kelly Gosshorn loves to weave her affinity for history and her passion for God into inspiring stories of love, faith, and family that is set in America's past. I really enjoy talking to Kelly about her journey through this story. And for those of you who know, please, you can go to my website at lisagranger.com or follow on your favorite podcast platform for A Woman's Heart with Lisa Granger for a special bonus episode I will release on the podcast as a bonus, my first conversation with Kelly about her debut novel, A Love Restored, which won several awards. But meanwhile, today, we're going to talk about her journey writing A Chiseled on the Heart, which is a beautiful Christmas story with a lot of lessons to learn. Welcome to A Woman's Heart. We have Kelly Gosshorn today, and I'm thrilled to have you back, Kelly. For those who have been listening for a long time, we had you on a while back with your very first book, and now you have another one. So thanks so much for joining us again today on A Woman's Heart, Kelly.
Thank you, Lisa. It's great to be here and to talk to your listeners and you, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes, so am I. Now, just in case for those who may not have heard last time, I would love for them to get to know you a little bit better. So tell us a little bit about yourself and something fun that's not normally in your bio.
So I'm a historical romance writer. I've been writing for about 10 years, and I like to describe myself as an old-fashioned Jesus girl trapped in the 20th century. I often feel like I don't belong here. I guess, actually, we're in the 21st century, so I really should catch up with myself.
Yeah, we're in the 21st century now, and we have been for a little while.
That's right. I've been married about 33 years to my best friend, Mike, and we have three grown children. When I'm not writing, let's see. We like to play board games. We play board games a lot. I enjoy binge watching, especially period dramas, but any kind of series I haven't watched that I want to catch up on, I like to wait until I've got lots of seasons and watch it. but I love just about anything on Masterpiece, so that's a favorite. And I have a little dog, a little corgi that I love to spoil.
So, all right. Yes, yeah. You do. His name's Levi, isn't he?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you know about Levi, too?
Yes.
People have said, you ought to make him an Instagram account. And I'm like, I don't think my pride could take it. He'd have twice as many as me or more.
He just might. Well, maybe you just need to do maybe a monthly feature on your Instagram. You know, Levi can just make a guest appearance every now and again to bump your numbers
there
up.
You
how's
go.
That?
There you go.
I'm sure he would be happy to cooperate.
That's funny. Yeah, he could. He could help me out, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, as I mentioned, we had you on before with your first novel that came out, but you have a new one. And I know for me, around Christmas time, there's something about reading a Christmas story. And so you are actually part of a compilation. It's called Chiseled on the Heart. And you are one of four stories in this book with three other authors. And the four of you got together. And Tell me about that process of how you all got together, came up with this concept, and divvied everything up.
Well, Chiseled on the Heart is my first Christmas story, and I absolutely loved writing a Christmas story. But I will insert that it's actually my third story. I was part of another compilation that came out in April.
Okay.
It's been really fun to collaborate with other authors and get to know them. So this particular book, Chiseled on the Heart, was one of my co-authors' brainchilds. That would be Cynthia Romer. And she kind of reached out to all of us and said, I have this idea. Would you guys like to be part of it? And we all said yes. And so Cynthia's idea was to have a collection where it followed four generations of one family. So we're following the male descendants of the Hawkins family. who each carve a piece of an heirloom nativity set. So I thought that was a really unique idea.
Yeah.
And a really fun idea. So we would meet via Zoom. We had a messenger group chat where we could ask questions to each other. But initially we met via Zoom to talk about what settings we were going to write, like what era we were going to write in, our character names, what piece of the nativity they were going to carve, all of that. Once we got those basics set down, we would just kind of message each other about like anything that we thought might affect somebody else's story. Like, would this work with your story? You know, that kind of thing. And just make sure everything flowed through the co-collection from beginning to end. And it's fun. So we have four different eras that we're writing in. The Gift of the Lamb, that was written by Elaine Marie Cooper. That was in 1776. Mm-hmm. And then Cynthia Romer, her story, A Lasting Legacy, was written in 1814. And Healing Within the Pieces is by Candace Posey. And that one takes place in 1836. And then I'm the last story in there. So not only do I have to wrap up my story, but I
you kind of wrap the whole thing up.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to give a sense of closure to the whole story and let everybody know that the whole family's moving on. And so mine is called The Christmas Carving, and it takes place in 1867.
Yes, and it takes place right after the Civil War. And I believe it takes place in an area somewhat close to where you live, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And so that was one of the neat things with the collection. I had had this idea for a story. And when the collection idea came about, I asked the other ladies if they would mind setting the stories here in Loudoun County, where I live. That's in Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
We're very close to the Maryland-West Virginia border in this town, this little town called Taylorstown. So they were all in agreement with that. And my story uses a real event that happened on Christmas Eve, 1864, as the catalyst of the story. It doesn't happen in the story, but it's referenced and remembered, but it doesn't happen live on the page. And so we look, we're about 3 years after that in 1867.
Yes, there was. Now, how did you go about, it's revealed fairly early in your story, so I want to be careful because I've read all of them now, so I know all of it. I can't tell you every single detail of all of it, but I don't want to give things away. That how did you, it was a very traumatic event, very devastating, that tore the town apart, and then the character Maddie, she has to kind of go away too because of her, you know, one of her family members' involvement in it. And she comes back 3 years later kind of with this feeling like she's on a mission from God, to quote the Blues Brothers, that she's on a mission from God to kind of bring about some restoration and some reconciliation and forgiveness. So how did you come about, or was that something that you all had talked about too, as far as what some of your themes were going to be?
Actually, no. I think each author had a theme to their own story, you know, and then they were tied together by this nativity and these carving tools that were handed down. A lot of times when I start to write, I can't speak for the other gals, but I know a lot of time when I start to write, I'm not always sure what my theme is.
Okay.
A lot of times it emerges as I write. But in this occasion, I did have a good idea about where God was taking the story. So if I can give just a little bit of the background, so we alluded to this event, then it's not a secret. I had been at a local historic event presentation, and the local historian was talking about this event on Christmas Eve where a young Union sergeant was essentially murdered in his home. He was having a Christmas party. He'd invited some of his fellow soldiers and friends to come. Several Confederate soldiers basically stormed into the house and executed him in front of his mother and his fiance and the partygoers.
Wow.
And while that sounds gruesome and not Christmassy, that's why we don't start with that event.
Yeah.
We're looking at the fallout of that and how did that affect this community? And those were the questions that I started wondering, because one of the neat dynamics about where I live is that Loudoun is a border county in a border state. So we had a lot of Union sympathizers here, a lot of Quakers. Even though Virginia seceded from the Union, this part of the county had a lot of Quakers and a lot of pro-Union sentiment. So they raised local troops. So instead of soldiers going to Gettysburg or Antietam, these troops stayed right here. They were called Independent Rangers. And they were constantly skirmishing, trying to attack supply lines and communications. So these people that came in that attacked Fleming Anderson, they knew him. They had grown up together. They had gone to school together. Like, so it made everything very, very personal.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a very interesting dynamic where people knew their families, they knew where their farms are, they knew who their sweethearts were. And so everything was just very personal. So that's kind of the setting, the background. And I decided I would make my hero, my fictional characters, the best friend of the young man who was shot, and my heroine, the sister of the man who did the shooting. And so,
yeah,
you know, it created a lot of natural conflict right off the bat.
Yes, it did. It created a whole lot of conflict right from the get-go.
And I just thought, you know, what would it look like? How would a community heal from something like that? And what might that look like? And so then that's where I sort of run with the fictional ball and create a story about how that might happen.
Yeah, well, and I know that a lot of times we can teach even better through a story. This was based on a real event. The characters you wrote about are not necessarily real people, but we can teach sometimes better through a story. And I know Jesus did it all the time. He taught through story all the time. And so this is really a story about that forgiveness. And as you mentioned, how would a community heal from that? So what are you hoping that the reader would learn as far as a lesson from the story?
Well, you know, that really ties into that theme of forgiveness and reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
And the world gives us so many opportunities every day to lay down grievances, to be offended and to lay down grievances. And I don't think we ever get to where the practice of that, we don't have enough practice for that. And I think that accepting change was also one of the themes in the story. And I think coming to that place where most people find change hard. Some people really embrace it and look for it. I think most of us probably are comfortable where we're at. And we don't want to change. And then maybe we get to that point where we're ready and we want it to happen right now.
Yeah.
Like, then we get impatient with the fact that, you know, God wants to really work this out of us, not
flip a switch. I am right there with you. There are times when I am very, very comfortable and I'm like, no, I don't want to change, except, well, I would like to change that. And I want it changed immediately. I don't want to have practice patience. I don't want to, you know, I just want to end up on the other side. I don't want to go through the ugly part. I just want to get there. And in the story, there's quite a bit of disappointment. Things are not always working out the way they would want. And your heroine has to be really pretty dang determined to keep up with her goal and what she wants to accomplish. And I think you did a beautiful job of showing how she is still very human in that she does get frustrated at times. And she does get, you know, rather despondent a few times. And then she kind of gets that second wind and gets encouraged and goes forward again. And I think for me, part of that has to be she really felt very strongly that she was on a real mission, that she had really felt called to do this. And so it wasn't so much that she trusted in her or the people in the town, but she was like, you know, God told me to do this. He's going to work it out. And I don't know how. And is that one of the themes that you wanted to get across? And have you ever had a moment for you that you really felt strongly about something and you were like, I don't know how he's going to work it out, but he told me to do it, so I know he's got to do it?
All the time. All the time. No, I think it's so interesting to see what readers will pull out of a story. And I love that was something that spoke to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it was more about forgiveness and reconciliation in terms of themes of the story. But for myself, in terms of embracing a mission or stepping into a calling,
is another way maybe to put that is, I really think the writing journey will be the best example of that in my life, because this was not on my radar. It was nothing I ever aspired to be. In fact, I would say I had no creative bone in my body at all. So this was like, not me. But for 3 years, my husband and I and our small group prayed for God to give me direction. I needed to do something new. I had been doing daycare for a long time. I had been trained as a teacher, and I didn't know if it would be going back to teaching because it had been like almost 20 years, but I needed something new. That was clear. And I was praying for God to give me a passion for something, and was kind of blown away when it was writing. But
as I say, you never know, tell God never.
Right? And when you step into what God's given you, whatever that is, I think it's terrifying. But I mean, when he comes alongside you and he equips you to do it, there's this realization of how dependent you are on God, how little you can do. I was praying for God to give me a passion to do something, and he answered that with the very thing that worked on all the under things that I wasn't thinking about, that I had a fear of rejection. I had a fear of failure, and I had, you know, all these things, perfectionism, that I had to let go, because there's nothing like writing a story and putting it out there for other people to read, from beta readers to editors to publishers to agents to the actual reader, and wondering if they're going to like it.
Well, I'm sure there was absolutely, it was the first book proposal was accepted and there were no edits and all the comments on the beta readers were just spot on, right?
Exactly. Said no author ever.
Yes, said no author ever. And I was going to say, there's some swampland somewhere that we could sell someone if they actually believe that. Very few times I mean, I've heard a few stories of people who kind of had people approach them and they didn't have to go through the book proposal process, but that they admit that is very, very rare. And that's really because of some other circumstances that, came about. But then they still had to do the work. Still had to do the work, and the editing and everything else is definitely quite the process. Now, and you mentioned that you really kind of were with the forgiveness and the reconciliation theme of the book that spoke to you. Was there anything else that you really learned through this process of the collaborating with the other authors and writing this story? You mentioned writing in general, just really God worked on you and your insecurities and some other things that he really kind of wanted to work out. What were some of those lessons that he taught you during writing this story?
I think going back to the idea about change, a couple times things changed in someone's story. And, you know, that has ripple effects. And you have to go and ask, like, well, if I do this, how bad is that going to mess up what you're doing?
Yeah.
You know, and we'd be like, I don't know. I think that will work. I'll get back to you. You know, and you kind of think about how you can work in what they're doing so that their story works the way they want it to be. And, you know, the neat thing is when you're open to what God wants to do and you feel like God's working with this author to bring her story, you know, to this point, then you want to be part of that too. And so you see how you can work through that and bring that into your story. And, you know, it with his fingerprints on it, I mean, it all comes together. And I don't know how that happens. It is a God thing. I would also say this might be my third story I've published. It's not the third I've written. And this was the first one that really brought me to tears at the end, in terms of not being sure I could get it done on the deadline. I was very stressed. I had only a couple of days left. And the ending, I knew what my ending was. I mean, the line, I had that, but things weren't wrapping up the way I thought, the way I had it originally written. And I'm like, this isn't working. Something's wrong. And my husband was praying with me and some other friends were praying with me. And I was very worried that I wasn't going to make the deadline. And so I was talking to a very good friend of mine, Deb Hackett. And I said, this is what I've got. It's not working. I said, what would you like to see happen? Or how do you think it would play out? And so she was like, you know, A, B, C. And I actually had all of those things. I didn't have them in that order.
Oh,
and it was sort of like that moment when I realized that's the problem. I'm getting my couple reconciled too soon, and he's making his change of heart too late. Like, I needed to flip some things around. And then amazingly, in like 24 hours, I rewrote the last like four chapters. I've never done that. I've never just out a chapter the way it needed to be.
24 hours, you rewrote four chapters?
Yes. Well, yeah, less than that, really, because I wasn't awake for the entire 24 hours. And that is a God thing, because that is not how I normally do anything. And I was really, really, I was so happy with the way it turned out. I was like, yes, this is it. And it just came out of me. And I knew that had to be God, because it really needed very little editing. And that's not the way I write.
So, okay. Yeah, no, definitely. It was,
I mean, in terms of what I gave the editor, they did some work on it, but in terms of what I felt I needed to do to turn in my best work before the editors took over.
No, absolutely. That is definitely a God thing, because I don't know of too many people that write four chapters in a day.
Right.
or rewrite them.
Yeah. And I'm kind of going back here a little bit, but just like thinking about the calling. And so if any of your listeners out there are thinking, oh, there's this thing like that, we know when God's talking to us, we know that feeling of that nudge, and sometimes it's stretching us. And so we want to like, I think I'll just not think about that right now.
I'm right? comfy sometimes in my comfort zone. It's decorated. It's got artwork.
Yeah. I would just encourage them to do it, because this writing journey has, not only is it this wonderful thing that I love, but it has really changed my faith. And there's nothing like really relying on God and knowing that you're stepping out of that boat, gotta get out of your comfort zone a little bit and trust God that he's not going to let you falter. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you'll be disappointed. I know you won't be disappointed.
Yeah. Well, what you just said there, as far as just really stepping out and the writing, growing your faith, I know in my journey with the podcast, is there's parts of it I'm like, oh, yeah, I love. And then there's parts of it where I'm like, oh, God, why do you have me doing this? Why? do you still this part isn't? And so, yeah, I can definitely relate to that whole, oh, but I thought you wanted me to do this. So why doesn't it look the way I think it's going to look? Because it doesn't always look the way I think it's going to look. And then I get discouraged and go, well, is it still you? And then I'll get something and go, yeah, it's still me. I'm working on you. And so, yeah, no, I can definitely relate. One of the quotes you had that I really liked in here, and when Wyatt is talking, and it's sort of towards the end, but he said, change doesn't have to come overnight. It just has to come. And I really did like that, because you mentioned the change, and in the story, it doesn't necessarily, is not necessarily the result that they were looking for, but they realized that still God was still working, and that there had been some really good things that happened. So, you know, as I just mentioned, that it may not always look the way I want to, and it sure as heck doesn't always happen when I want it to. The timing isn't always, you know, on my calendar the way I would like it. But that still doesn't mean that God isn't working, and we can still trust him, and he is still faithful to work things out if he's called us to do something.
Yes.
So I appreciate that encouragement. And that's one of the questions that I like to ask is, what would you say to encourage someone? And I love to just step out and do it and try to enjoy the process of learning as things are getting molded and shaped, even though some of it feels more like surgery without anesthesia.
I can relate to that. I would say stay the course. If you know it is something God is calling you to do, you know, step out in obedience, trust him. I guarantee there'll be times when you're banging your head going, why did you do this, God?
Like, why me? Or I have done that even with the writing, you know, why me?
But you see the fruit and you see the change in yourself when you're being obedient and God is stretching you and taking you and allowing you to come in to this ministry opportunity with him. You mm-hmm. won't regret it because much like, now I haven't been on a short-term mission, but much like everyone I know that has said, they've come back changed.
Yeah.
They went to make a difference where they were going and it made a huge difference in them. Mm-hmm. And I just think the same is true, whatever that is God's calling you to do.
Yeah.
Whether it's something that becomes a vocation or a career like myself, or whether it's a service opportunity in your community or church, or talking to someone about your faith that, you know, that's hard for you. Mm-hmm. Just follow that nudge and it will change your relationship with God in ways you can't even imagine. And that's what I think we all want in the end, is to have that rich relationship with our Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where we do, we really lean in and trust him in the days where it's all working out fine and four chapters are just flowing out of your fingers in 24 hours, or whether you're staring at a computer screen and going, I don't get it. What do I do now? Why am I doing this? And so, yeah, God's still there in both cases and teaching and stretching. And so, yeah, I would amen. Amen to that. I appreciate the sentiment and the encouragement. I think it's really, really good. And Kelly, if somebody wants to connect with you, what is the best way? We've mentioned Instagram earlier, and maybe you'll put Levi on a couple of times.
You're right.
But what are some other ways that people can connect with you?
That would be really to go to my website.
Okay.
Kelly.Gosshorn. No, that's not right. That's my email. It's kellygosshorn there you go.
kellygosshorn.com.
Thank you. I kept trying to do my email and I couldn't get it out of my head. I know my URL. There you go. And you sign up for my newsletter. You can stay connected with me, or you can link on to my social media from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can learn about my books there. And also I would encourage any book clubs are reading the book or interested in reading the book, I would love to chat with them via Zoom about the book.
Okay.
And I'd also encourage your listeners to check out my co-authors. They're wonderful authors. They have so many fantastic historical romances out there, all Christian authors. They're Candace West, Elaine Marie Cooper, and Cynthia Romer. And if you Google them with the word author attached to their name, you'll find their website. And you can learn about their amazing stories there, too.
Okay. Well, we will include your website and how people can get the book in the show notes so they can get a hold of that, too. And Kelly, thank you. As I mentioned earlier, I thoroughly enjoyed the book. It was my first Christmas book of the season, since normally I don't start reading them until December, but we're recording earlier than that so that we can not have to do this during the holidays. So it was my first holiday book of the season, and it really was special. And I do. I love how that heirloom nativity set went through all the way. And some of the stories, I was like, oh my goodness, what? Wait a minute. How'd he end up there? And then catching up and all of that. So I do. I love the beauty of that nativity set that just went all the way through, and the stories and the themes that went all the way through. So I really, really did enjoy it. And I enjoyed our conversation as well.
It was fun talking to you. Yes. Thank you. And thank you for knowing my website, because clearly my brain checked out on that.
Oh, yes. So, well, every now and again that happens. But thank you so much for joining us today, Kelly.
It was great talking to you, Lisa. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining me today on A Woman's Heart with Lisa Granger, where we offer hope, encouragement, and real life application to walk closer with God. Please be sure to check out the show notes to connect with Kelly and her co-authors and enjoy their book, Chiseled on the Heart, for yourself or give it to a friend. For a special bonus episode of my first conversation with Kelly, check out my website, lisagranger.com, or make sure you have followed on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss out. Have a very blessed day.